Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The past 3 weeks have been chaotic and upsetting for most South Dakotans. Today, we're spending the hour focused on student athletes and sports in the state. Dan Sordis is executive director of the South Dakota High School Activities Association. He's joining us now to recap how the coronavirus pandemic has changed the game and how we might move forward in the best possible way under the current circumstances. Dan, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I don't know how many deep breaths you've been able to take in the past month.
Yeah, it's been a wild month, and it's felt like about 6 months.
Yeah. All right. So there's a lot of news about COVID-19 and how it's changed the plans of many, including the high school sports world in South Dakota. Take us back a little bit to that girls' B tournament in Spearfish. So leading into that tournament, there were things that we knew about COVID in South Dakota, and you were trying to make decisions in a very intense moment that were big decisions with big consequences for people. Walk us through that week a little bit and help us understand how it unfolded.
Sure. That was a really weird time, I think, across the country and across our state, in that I think we happened to be holding this tournament at the same time that everyone was really coming to grips with what this was going to look like and what it was going to mean. And we had been talking with our Department of Health and our governor's office for the week prior to that, and then the week of it, we were talking to them very regularly. And, from Tuesday to Wednesday to Thursday, the CDC guidelines on how many people should gather changed really dramatically, and sometimes several times a day. So we had talked to the governor's office Wednesday and had sort of gone over what our normal attendance figures looked like per session at girls' B basketball. And those were generally right around that 400 to 1,000 people range. And at that time, you know, that's what a lot of cities were going to. They were limiting gatherings to 1,000 to 3,000 people. And the CDC guidelines were still allowing that. So we decided to proceed. And our tournament started Thursday, and we talked to them Thursday morning, and we were still good to go, and we tipped off at noon mountain time, our first game. And about 10 minutes into that game, the guidance started changing, and it started shifting down to that 250 number. So in between the first session and the second session, we switched to a limited ticket model, and we're able to allow 125 from each community into the gym. That was including the players as well. So we switched to that model for the second session of that day, the last two games. And then we touched base with the governor's office that following morning, Friday morning. And at that time, things had changed again. And it was their recommendation and their request at that time that we postpone the tournament. So we did that. And we did that with our girls' B tournament and then the rest of our winter activities, which would be the other five basketball tournaments that were scheduled for the following weekend, along with visual arts, which is held in conjunction with basketball, and then our all-state band and region music competitions.
Yeah. So one of the things that as people go through this, business leaders and leaders in cities and counties and towns across the state, you're making these decisions based on the information that you have right now, and then you're watching that information change, and you're dealing with, the consequences of not making the right decision or overreacting or underreacting. And you have to own those decisions. And when you're in the middle of a basketball tournament and suddenly you say, we're going to limit the number of people who can watch this tournament, you had to have been getting comments from all sides, people who were upset with that decision, people who wanted you to do more in that moment. Tell me a little bit about just finding your center with the people around you as you're making those hard decisions and saying, we have to do this, even though nobody is 100% sure right now what right. This looks like tomorrow at this time.
Yeah, it was really difficult. You know, right now we're kind of in a we're in a more of a steady pattern in terms of people have gotten their feet underneath them about what this is and the recommendations for social distancing and how many people should be together. That's sort of settled in and people are used to that. But at the time, we had the NBA had suspended their season that Wednesday evening. The NCAA had gone to fans only and then had canceled their entire March Madness and the Division I wrestling tournament and then had canceled all spring sports. We were going off of what the experts, the people in our state that had the information for our state, what they were telling us. And again, that was really fluid for a couple of days because this was right at the tip of this outbreak. So, yeah, it was really difficult. And when we made the decision to go to reduced tickets, we had quite a few people upset with us because, of course, it was out in Spearfish, too, and 7 of the 8 teams were from East River. And a lot of people had driven a long ways to get out there. So there were people upset with us about that, but as an organization, we have to trust that the experts in our state are giving us the information that we need, and we have to go off of that. And if that upsets some people, that's part of the job. And there's a lot of people around the state who are in those similar positions who have been in those similar positions for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. What did you hear from players and athletic directors and coaches once it was time for you to say, basically, it's time to go home? What sort of responses did you had to have seen some emotional tears and realization of what the reality was?
Yeah. I mean, overall, the administrators we worked with, the coaches we worked with, and the kids who were there handled it extremely well, way better than I could have ever expected. After we got off the phone with the governor's office Friday morning, we called all the administrators in and met with them and wanted to tell them first and let them tell their coaches and let the coaches tell the kids so that they didn't hear about it through the media, that they heard about it from their coaches. So we did that, and everyone there was really understanding. Again, it was a weird time because it was still sort of sinking in just exactly what this was and what it was going to be. But it was tough. We had met with them at the team hotel, and there were some teams who had been up at the at Black Hills State at the gymnasium practicing that morning, and I met a couple of the teams who were coming back in, and there was a lot of tears, and it breaks your heart for them, especially for the seniors. But at the end of the day, we have to rely on safety first, and we have to rely on the guidance that we're giving. So it was really tough to see, but we did also feel that we were doing the right thing. And, we had a request from the governor, and we were going to honor that request.
Last Friday, there's a board meeting in Pierre. Tell us what happens in that meeting and what is being discussed as far as spring and remaining winter activities going forward.
Yeah, so we have some spring activities that would be scheduled yet this spring. All-state jazz band, and then we have tennis and golf and track. And then we also had our winter activities that have been postponed with region music, all-state band, and then the 6 basketball tournaments. So we had been sort of waiting to see where this was going to land. We figured that there would be a longer-term closure of schools. At first, they were sort of going week by week, and then they came out and had closed it through May 1st. And then following that, we had suspended all practices and competitions through May 4th, through May 3rd, which would be that Sunday. But we wanted to get the board together to just talk about, okay, now we've got a better idea of what this looks like right now. Here's what our spring activities can look like, and here's what those winter events, here's how they could be made up. Assuming, this is all under the assumption that, number one, school was able to, what actually got back in session on May 4th, and the CDC guidelines would allow us to do any of it.
Right.
And on top of that, we also would need to make decisions on, okay, if school comes in and CDC guidelines allow it, is this still something that is responsible to do. And, you know, just because you can do something doesn't always mean that you should do something. So it was more of an opportunity for us to visit with the board, say, you know, we've worked through this. Here's our contingency plan. If things look a lot better in a month and school's back in session and, you know, the CDC guidelines are lifted and it seems like this would be a responsible thing to do, here's how our spring activities could look, and here's when we could make up those winter activities that were postponed. So the board took a look at that, and you know, they had some really good discussion about it and essentially just told us, yep, this is good, continue planning for it. And we've got a regular board meeting April 21st. And then we also are tentatively planning to get together around that first part of May when we have a better idea both of if school is going to resume and what the CDC guidelines look like at that point.
Yeah.
So the board took a really hard look at it, and I was really thankful for that. They've really made it a priority, and our staff feels the same way, that, you know, we can, there's still some hope for this, but we don't want to give false hope. So we're trying to be realistic. But if this is something that can happen, and it can happen safely, and it's something that we're able to do, it can be a big thing for these kids in a signal of a return to normalcy. But the first aspect has to be safety and practicality. And I think our board was clear on that, and the staff has been pretty clear on that as well.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that people are kind of getting their minds around now, as I talk to people, is this idea that these drastic measures that we're taking by, you know, staying home and the closures that we're seeing across our communities, that the medical professionals, if those work, then we would not overwhelm our healthcare system, and there might be a temptation to go back to normal a little bit too soon, but those efforts are what's causing that curve to flatten. So like you said, there's a big difference between what does it look like we can do and what can we actually do, the difference between giving hope and giving false hope. But I want to dive into a little bit of what you said there about the importance of activities like basketball and band and the arts and these things for students as students continue. Schools aren't, you know, the buildings are closed, but school is in session and kids are studying and working on their studies online. For some of these kids, those activities are the reason to get out of bed in the morning and show up, whether it's because that's the best part of your day or just because you just love it and it's the best part of a great day. We're in these activities. Our kids participate in these things for more than just, you know, something to do on the side. It's central to our lives in so many ways. It's talk a little bit about just how huge of a disruption this is for students, for coaches, and for families.
Yeah, I mean, our whole mission is educational-based athletics, and what we try to do is you know, be the organizational force and the sort of the central force behind athletics and fine arts activities that kids can do that positively impact their overall educational experience. And, you know, we've seen it on the social side right now, even with pro sports and basketball. You don't realize... how big of a deal these things are socially to people until they're gone. And we're seeing that with kids right now. And you know, there's always kids who are great students and who do this, but there's at-risk kids who count on these things and use activities as motivation to continue moving along in school and to finish out school. So for those kids, it's a tough time, and maybe some of that motivation that they've had is now gone, and they're having to rely on some more intrinsic reasons to continue school and to finish school and stay eligible and graduate. So I think it impacts a lot of our kids, and that's not even to mention the amount of work and time and effort that have gone into these events. You know, if they're seniors and they're basketball players, they maybe have been playing basketball since second or third grade.
Yeah.
And they might not be going on to college, and this was their, you know, their finale to all that time and all that work, and it's it can be difficult for kids. But, you know, one of the better things I've heard over the last couple of weeks is that, you know, there's times when social responsibility is more important than a lot of these other things. And I think our kids have done a really good job of keeping that perspective in place. And I know our schools and our administrators and our coaches have done that as well.
Yeah. Tell me about if there have been any discussions regarding how awards could be handled if the events cannot take place.
We haven't, as a staff, we've talked about that a little bit. And I was on a conference call a few weeks ago with, in general, there's one person in each state that has the same job that I have. Each state has their own sort of governing body. And I was on a conference call with 25 or 30 other states, mostly from Middle America. And that was a conversation that came up, and every state was sort of in a different spot within their year. But we got some good ideas as to how to handle that. You know, one of the rumors that was going around was that we were just going to hand out places based on what seed they were within the tournament. And I can tell you that won't happen. We're going to try to recognize them somehow, but we're not going to give out places based on where they were in the tournament. So we want to recognize all the kids somehow. We're still working on that and getting some ideas from other states as to what they're doing.
Are there ideas about how these seniors who were going on to, you know, audition or play, you know, athletics in college, what kind of efforts are being made to, it's an entire generation of kids who are being impacted at the same time. Are you hearing word from colleges coming up with interesting plans?
Well, you know, the one thing we've checked with colleges about, and we worked with USD and the Missouri Valley Conference on this when we were looking at when to potentially finish our basketball tournament. And you know, the main thing we've done in that so far was to ensure that seniors who are going on to play college sports, and not just basketball, but any college sport, that they'd be able to finish this basketball tournament up in mid-June and not risk their eligibility in college. So, you know, we worked with Dave Herbster at USD, and he got us in touch with some people at the Missouri Valley Conference who answered our questions about that, and we were able to put some guidance out to the head coaches about that. And that's been our concern so far, is making sure that if we're able to do this, that it doesn't jeopardize the future for any of these kids and any of their college eligibility. But we do have a lot of kids who are going on to play, either participate in music programs in college or various athletic programs in college. And, you know, if we get to that point, some of them are going to have to make a choice, and that's okay. You know, there's some that would be reporting in June at some point, and that they may have to make a choice at that point, and they're going to have to do what's best for them at that time. And and our hope is that the college coaches work with them on that, and I think that they'd be understanding.
Dan Swartos is the executive director of the South Dakota High School Activities Association. Thank you for all the work that you're doing, as difficult as that leadership is. Thanks for stepping into those tough conversations. We appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you.